shattering this, we have one of my favorite people in the world on the line calling in from Europe, and his name is IQ Al-Rasouli. He's the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. And before we begin with IQ, I just want a bit of an introduction. And one of this to be interactive with IQ. IQ, are you familiar with Einstein's theory that equates energy and matter?
Of course, EMC squared.
Right. And what does that mean?
Well,
you know what E stands for, what M stands for, what the C stands for, and what that equation means?
Yeah, it's E is for energy, mm-hmm. M for mass. C is for the constant speed of light, 186,300 miles a second.
Okay. So what Einstein did is took something that is unimaginably complicated, the universe, and he said that the universe is comprised of two things, energy and matter. But that energy and matter are really the same thing, they're just not the same amount of the same thing. That energy equals matter times the square of the speed of light, which means that matter is an enormously diminished form of energy. That's a very profound and yet incredibly simple explanation of the universe. That's what you've done to Islam. Islam has so many tentacles. You know, it has there is a political element to it, a religious element to it, a criminal element to it, a legal aspect to it. You deduced the common denominator in everything that is Islam, the very cause that initiated the consequence. You said that Islam is a criminal enterprise. If that's all you know about Islam, then you know the heart of the beast. No one else even came close to that IQ. That is the E equals MC squared of Islam. It is a criminal enterprise. Full stop. If you understand that and nothing more, you will understand the beast. Now, proof of that is Badr, is it not?
Absolutely, yes. The Battle of Badr.
Is there... did Badr come late in the Islamic era, or was it really the first recorded event of the, well, actually the second recorded event of the Islamic era? The first would be the Pledge of Aqaba.
It was the first terrorist enterprise started by Islam.
Right.
It never stopped for 1400 years and continues as we speak today.
So the first recorded event of the Islamic era is the Pledge of Aqaba. Could you tell our listeners what was affirmed? What was the pledge of Aqaba?
When Muhammad, for 13 years, was trying to convert his own tribe, the pagan tribe of Quraysh, by telling them that Allah is the only God of Arabia, not the 360 gods and goddesses, and that he, Muhammad, was Rasulullah, means the messenger of Allah, passing on to his followers the message from Allah that Allah is one, and Muhammad is Rasulullah, and Muhammad will be the one who will guide them everywhere. And for 13 years, he was trying to convert them. He couldn't succeed, because the maximum number of people who converted or believed in him, after 13 years, were not more than 100 people. Most of them were family, slaves, and wives. Then he ran away from Mecca to go to Medina, where he made an agreement with two of the tribes of Medina, the pagan tribes, Al-Khaws, Al-Aws wal Khazraj. He said to them, look guys, I am Rasulullah, I am the messenger of Allah. I promise you that if you follow all my instructions and you follow me 100%, I will give you in death, you'll become martyrs and you will end up in my whorehouse version of paradise with the 72 virgins. But if in battle you succeed, then you will have, you kill the men, you plunder their wealth, you take their women to rape them, and you take their children to sell them as slaves. It was, in a way, from my point of view, his point of view, is a win-win situation. Not from the moral point of view. And he succeeded enormously.
Can I challenge one of the things that you said? Which you've actually presented this is far too kindly. Muhammad almost never mentioned the name of Allah while he was in Mecca. His god while he was in Mecca was Ar-Rahman, which was a stone god for the Hanafs in Yemen. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
The god's name did not change until Muhammad fled Mecca in shame and headed to Yathrib, today's Medina. But I would tell you that there's an enormous insight as to why Muhammad had to flee. You see, Muhammad was so desirous, not on communicating this notion that he was the messenger of Allah, but in enriching and empowering himself, that he was willing to change his story completely and to say, no, there's a bunch of goddesses that are all part of the Kaaba, Alat, Manat, Al-Uzza, that are intermediaries to Allah. And that all of them, you know, are viable because he was offered a deal by his Quraysh tribe, which just basically said that if you'll agree to include our goddesses and the Kaaba in all of this, we will we'll give you the power and wealth and babes that you desire. He was run out of town because of what's called the satanic verses. Isn't that true?
True. Yes.
And so Muhammad was willing to change his story. And it's all recorded in the Quran. Muhammad was willing to completely change his story to satiate his own personal lusts.
You asked me about the pledge and the agreement. Yeah. I didn't want to go into the detail, but you're right. These are the details. These are the cornerstone of what happened.
Yeah. And I think sometimes the detail provides the perspective that leads to understanding. That's why he had the Pledge of Aqaba. It's not that he had these profound insights and that he was committed to monotheism and that he actually believed that he was the messenger of Allah. And when they didn't accept him, he went to people that would accept him. No, he was willing to change his story to satiate his own lust for power, sex, and money. And that's why he found himself on the outs.
And that's exactly what he did. He succeeded beyond his own wildest imaginations.
And how did he respond? I mean, let's give a little more perspective. This idea that the Pledge of Aqaba ultimately said that we pledge to wage war against all mankind on behalf of Muhammad. Who did he initially turn that rage against?
First, against his own tribe.
Right. Quraysh. Exactly. His own tribe. Why? Because they didn't give him what he wanted. They didn't admire him. They didn't accept him. Now, you would think
they had a good reason not to admire him.
Yeah, because he was a moron.
Yeah, because they said he was a moron. They said he was a charlatan. They said he was a liar. And the Quran says that they said that.
Right. So what's the first official act in Islam? What is the first thing that Muhammad does once he gets to Mecca and he says, you know, he doesn't work. He doesn't create anything of value. His followers don't work. They're deadbeat dependents. So what does he do?
Plunder.
What does he do in Badr? What was the purpose of Badr according to the Quran and Hadith?
First of all, it was an ambush of a civilian caravan. Literally, to plunder it. That's it, and that's what he wanted.
Did Muhammad ever fight an army? Ever?
In 23 years of his life as a messenger, so-called, never.
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 So every raid that he engaged in, inspired, or led was a ambush where he had militants attack lightly armed or unarmed civilians.
Correct. All the time. Every time.
Always. Every time. So,
every time.
Yes. And so in Badr, a little bit of Badr was because Muhammad wanted authorization to kill those who called him what he is, a moron. That's part of it, right?
Absolutely. He wanted revenge.
Right. And we know that because Muhammad not only killed the Quraysh, we have Muslims recorded what he did that night, which is to stay up all night and mock those that he not only killed but mutilated.
Absolutely.
That's a special kind of perversion, right?
Yes.
So he wanted, it's kind of like the mafia takes pleasure in, and they actually leave their mark. You know, they might kill somebody, and then they leave their mark because they take pleasure in that ghoulish act.
That's why his followers like ISIS, like Boko Haram, like Hamas, do exactly.
They celebrate killing.
Absolutely.
Right. That's a death cult. They do celebrate killing. But that wasn't the primary purpose of Badr, was it?
No, the primary was literally to plunder, to enrich himself. And he did. Because by enriching himself, he was able to bribe others and scare others into converting.
What was the difference between what he did, other than it was far less sophisticated and successful than what Genghis Khan did?
Genghis Khan actually went to war and fought literally himself.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
He was not a coward.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's true that Genghis Khan was a master strategist, and he conquered the largest and controlled the largest landmass in human history. But Genghis Khan conned his militants into fighting for him because they got a portion of the spoils.
All the time.
And that was the economy of the Mongols at that time, was stealing from us. Very much like the Vikings. The Viking economics was, rather than work ourselves, we're going to work at being militants, and we're going to go and rob civilians.
But Genghis Khan was unique. He actually destroyed empires with military organizations.
Yeah, the strategy.
Kill civilians.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to agree that the Genghis Khan comparison towards Muhammad is unfair to Genghis Khan, in that one man was a brilliant strategist and an effective general, and the other was just a run-of-the-mill thug. But both of them, their economics, their purpose in life was to steal what others had. They were plunderers. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It really is so simple, IQ. And you, uniquely, and all of humankind, came up with the formula. That Islam is nothing more than a criminal enterprise. That Muhammad's first official act in the first year of the Islamic era was to ambush a civilian caravan for the express purpose of robbing it.
On the details. Mm-hmm. He created chapter 8 called Al-Anfal, right, meaning plunder or booty. Mm-hmm. A whole surah, a whole chapter, to justify and to explain away his dastardly deed. A whole chapter in the Quran, chapter 8.
That's where I was going. I was going to say, if our listeners want verification of any of this, the details and the overall perspective, the Muhammad's attempt to represent our Rahman in Mecca, and his neighbors, the Quraysh's response, probably fill the better part of 30 surahs, maybe. 30 surahs, would you guess? 30 or 40 surahs that have this never-ending argument where Muhammad says, you know, I am the messenger of our Rahman or of the Lord, and the Meccans saying, you're nothing but a demon-possessed, covetous, perverted con man, representing yourself. And then Muhammad responding by saying that my God's going to get you, my God's going to torture you. It doesn't that just dominate like 30 or 40 of the early surahs chronologically?
Correct. But also we have to point out, it is true that Ar-Rahman was the name of the God that he used in Mecca. But Ar-Rahman was the God of the Yemen.
Right.
No exegete in Islam in 1400 years allow any follower of Muhammad to know that Ar-Rahman was actually the name of the God of the Yemen. Because they will tell you that Ar-Rahman, in fact, is Allah, but with a different name.
Yeah.
So they deceive.
And it isn't. And, you know, the Quran's really clear on this. It says that that the name of the Islamic Ilah, or God, is Ar-Rahman. And there's surahs named Ar-Rahman after the name of the Hanif deity of the Yemenites.
Correct.
And matter of fact, the initial surahs of the Quran take the Hanif poetry, the Hanif rhythm and rhyme, the Hanif doctrine regarding Ar-Rahman, and Muhammad plagiarizes it to begin his Quran.
Absolutely. Like he plagiarized, plundered, pirated, and or perverted everything in the Quran from the pagan Arabs, from the Judaized Arabs, and Christian Arabs.
Yeah, everything. Yeah, everything in the Quran is plagiarized. There isn't anything
every
in the Quran
but the Quran is plagiarized.
You know, plagiarizing is a little bit too kind of word, and you know, I use the word all the time because it's really bastardized. It's taking plagiarizing from a source and then twisting it and convoluting it such that what you're doing is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it makes anybody who is informed knows Muhammad is an absolute moron. But absolute proof that those who knew Muhammad best recognized that he was a con man, that he was a thief, that he was a sexual pervert. There is absolutely irrefutable proof of that in the Quran, and at least 30 or 40 surahs. Proof that Ar-Rahman was his first god is also in the Quran. There's no question that these things that we're saying are irrefutable. Not only true, but irrefutable.
And the best people who knew him were his own family, his own tribe. That's why they didn't believe in him. That's why after 13 years, he had to go to Medina to create a following. But what kind of following? Not religious following. Thugs.
Right.
Thugs. Yes. That's what it is. Right. Thugs.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I know Muhammad better than anyone alive today. But we don't know him as well as his tribesmen knew him. And everything that his fellow tribesmen thought of him is recorded in the Quran. And do they ever say anything even remotely complimentary about him? Or is everything they say about him, he was perverted sexually, he was greedy, he lusted for power, that he was an absolute idiot, that he had no proof whatsoever of what he was claiming, and that he was probably demon-possessed?
That's exactly what Muhammad says. What they thought about him.
Right.
All recorded. Nothing that I say, nothing that you say is a lie. It is all recorded in the Quran.
Right. As is the satanic verses where Muhammad capitulated with the Quraysh and elevated the three goddesses of the Kaaba, which was a rock pile of rock gods, into co-deities. All for sex, power, and money. It's there too, folks. We're trying to provide perspective by analyzing IQ al-Rasuli's approach to Islam, which I think is the E equals MC squared of Islam, the ultimate synthesis of the religion so that you can understand it and the consequence of the religion. IQ, you've mentioned that that Badr is not only detailed in the Quran, but there's an entire surah devoted to it. And in that surah, we know it was the first assault of Muhammad, because doesn't that surah say that one of Allah's messengers is not allowed to kidnap people, to enslave them, until he has first made a great slaughter in the land?
Absolutely.
So Muhammad, who promised his goons, the first Muslims, the gain of being able to rob the Meccan caravan, he turned murderous. They didn't expect him to be murderous. And he also did it in Ramadan, which was a pagan holy month. And they said, you know, you can't enslave people in a pagan holy month. So he came up with this line that says, you know, once one of Allah's messengers makes a great slaughter, then they can do these things. They're authorized to do them. And since Muhammad did them over and over again, this was the first act of Islam.
Correct. He broke every rule, by the way, as you said. He broke every rule that the pagan Arabs believed in. And in this surah also, verse 30, Allah is called Khayrul Makirin, means Allah is the best deceiver of all.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, why would anybody in their right mind put their faith in a God who acknowledges in his own Quran that he is the best deceiver? Would you have to be, and I came to the conclusion, and check me if I'm wrong, that you have to be a complete moron, a total idiot, ignorant and irrational to be a Muslim, because Allah admits that he's the best of all deceivers.
You're right. I would like to recite it in total.
Please.
Chapter 8, Al-Anfal, verse 30, it says, Muhammad is addressing, of course, his followers, the ones who just plundered and murdered people. Remember how the unbelievers plotted against thee to keep thee in bonds or slay thee, which is not true. Nobody
right.
plotted against them.
Right, sure.
Or get thee out of your homes. They plot and plan, but Allah, too, plots and plans, and Allah is the best of all al-makirin deceivers. That's wow. the God of Islam.
Right. Actually, the God of Islam is Muhammad. So Muhammad is claiming that he, it's true. I mean, you pointed this out so many times that Muhammad is the best of all deceivers. He deceived a billion people into believing that there's a God named Allah and that he was Allah's messenger.
But he continues to deceive them. The
Correct.
Idiots, they are still believing. 1.5 billion followers of Muhammad,
right.
of every nationality, of every culture, of every race, of every color, have no two brain cells of logic when it comes to Islam.
Still entrapped in this criminal enterprise. But once you read the Quran and you put it together chronologically and you realize that everything we have just summarized and this transition in the first year of the Islamic era that is based entirely on a criminal act, justifying killing, justifying robbery, justifying laying in wait to terrorize civilians, that once you put it in chronological order and use the Quran to do so, it's over. Islam is nothing more than a criminal enterprise that people are still engaged in.
Unbelievable. But it's true. And yet, as you said, it is so simple.
It is so simple.
It's simple. It is really simple. All you have to read is chapters 1 to chapter 9 of the Quran. You don't need to have all 114 of them.
Correct.
And by the time you finish 9 chapters, which takes you 3 hours,
mm-hmm.
you should come to the same conclusion as Yada and myself. You cannot possibly come to any other conclusion. It's impossible.
It's impossible. Not if you're open-minded, if you're rational. It's all laid out there for you. The 8th surah is the first official act in the Islamic era. And Muhammad engaged in Badr for a singular purpose, and it wasn't to spread Islam. There is absolutely no mention in the 8th surah about being an evangelist, about convincing people that Islam is right, about compelling people to join him. 100% of the surah is devoted to justifying murder, justifying stealing, justifying deception.
And justifying also that the plunder, 20% goes to Muhammad,
mm-hmm.
and 80% split among all the thugs.
Right. That's a criminal enterprise.
Absolutely. It's that simple.
It is that simple. You know, so we ended our program a week ago where I simply said, you know, a man that I've come to like and respect has provided a comprehensive and simple understanding of the religion Islam, of Islam, and he said it's nothing more than a criminal enterprise. And IQ, that is the E equals MC squared of the religion. It's cause and consequence.
I love your similitude, but it's unbelievable that it is really simple.
It is.
And yet people do not believe us, and they believe what they are looking in the news media, what they read in newspapers.
But if you look at what you read about Islam engaged in the slave trade, Islam engaged in rapes, Islam engaged in beheadings, Islam funding itself through armed robbery, Islam continuing to use terrorism where Muslims who are heavily armed attack lightly armed or unarmed civilians. What is different in what you read in the newspapers and your formula that explains what Islam actually is? How is there any disconnect there?
I have no idea. Only the people who have got two braces of logic cannot come to the conclusion. That's why. I mean, I'm not insulting anybody.
Right.
If somebody is looking at a belief system,
mm-hmm,
that says that women are inferior human beings, that women are equal to domestic animals, that anybody who does not believe as they do should be put to death, that's 80% of current humanity. How could anybody believe such belief system? How could anybody respect such a belief system? When Muslims say that Muhammad was insulted, that they slandered the name, the character of Muhammad, you cannot slander somebody who is beneath contempt.
Right.
Islam and Muhammad are beneath contempt. It is impossible to slander them or insult them.
Yeah. Islam is not a great religion. It's a criminal enterprise.
Absolutely.
It was.
It was religion.
It always has been. And it always will be a criminal enterprise. And the reason that's so important is not only is it the E equals MC squared of Islam, the synthesis of Islam, the very heart and soul of Islam, it tells you how to deal with it. It not only explains what Muslims are doing today and why they're doing it and gives you the ability to predict their next move, but it tells you how to deal with Islam. What does the world do to organized crime syndicates?
Quarantine them, put them in prison, or execute them.
Correct. Does the world ever say, you know, I think what we need to do with organized crime is to accept it, to tolerate it, to call it great, to embrace it, to work with it, to help it spread?
Never. No more. But in any society.
In any society. So if people understood the absolute truth that Islam is a criminal enterprise, they would know how to respond to it.
Yes.
And if somebody today were to, let's just say the idiot Pope Francis or the other idiot, the Obaminator, were to come out and say that the right thing to do in our world is to recognize the greatness of the mafia and to know that the mafia brought us distribution of recreational drugs and they brought us gambling schemes and that they brought us all forms of extortion, and that the thing that we ought to do is recognize the great contribution of the mafia, and we need to encourage them to be part of the fabric of our societies, that we will never be at war with the mafia. How would people respond to that?
I don't know. Maybe they would love Obama even more.
But my friend,
back to what you just described, the mafia and Islam. You just substituted the mafia instead of the word Islam.
Yeah.
But
that's not fair to the mafia. That isn't fair to the mafia because the mafia doesn't engage in rape. The mafia almost never engages in the slave trade for sex.
Yeah, but they don't engage also in the destruction of other human beings for no reason at all.
Right. The mafia doesn't go off and kill unarmed civilians for fun.
None. As far as I know from all my studies of the mafia,
yes,
they killed each other because both sides were armed.
Or competing.
They really attempted to kill families of each other's family.
Right. That's kind of like the Sunni-Shia civil war that we're witnessing in Yemen and Syria and Iraq, is the is this infighting amongst the various mafia families. And so that exists. There is that commonality in Islam and the mafia. But the difference is the mafia then doesn't go after criminal enterprises and slaughtering people like Islam does, going after the Zoroastrians, going after the Christians, going after the agnostics and the atheists.
The mafia also does not go against the children and wives and daughters of the other mafia.
Correct.
The Muslims are killing each other indiscriminately. Right. Men, women, children, doesn't make any difference. They blow them up in the mosques. The mafia does not do that in Catholic churches or even Protestant churches.
Yeah. So we're actually being too kind to Islam to compare it to the mafia. It's far worse than the mafia.
Yes, yes, yes. There's no comparison, really. The only comparison is the attitude of criminality. It's an organized crime syndicate. That's it.
Full stop. That's all it is. If you understand Islam as IQ al-Rasuli has summarized it, then you understand how they were conceived, why they were conceived. You understand all of Islamic history. You understand today, and you can predict tomorrow. And you know exactly what to do to stop Islamic terrorism. It's a criminal enterprise. He's right. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. If you look at the crossroads of the world, the place where Europe, Asia, and Africa intersect, and from that epicenter where the world's crossroads exist, and you draw a radius of about 1,000 miles, the entire region is engulfed in war. IQ, what is the cause of every one of those wars?
Islam.
Today, there are scores, if not hundreds, of terrorist attacks that are perpetrated asymmetrically of militants against civilians. Every day, hundreds of them. What is the cause of 100% of those?
Islam. This again.
So wouldn't you think that people would be interested in what causes Islam to be the cause of virtually every war and of every terrorist act?
Yes, they are interested, but they are being misled by our politically correct or incorrect leaders and academia by telling them this is only a small percentage of Islam, and those people are even misinterpreting Islam.
Does they create this impression that there's two Islams? There's a very small Islam that's called radical Islam, and then there's the religion of Islam as a peaceful, loving, moderate religion. But there is no peaceful Islam. There is no moderate Islam.
There are no shades. There are no shades in Islam.
Doesn't the Quran say that if you're not a jihadist, you cease to be a Muslim?
Of course.
So there can't be a peaceful Muslim, according to the Quran's definition. What definition is higher in terms of authenticity in Islam than the Quran's?
None.
So when a person speaks of a radical Islam versus moderate Islam, what they're doing is contradicting the Quran, aren't they?
Yes, they're talking crap.
Absolutely.
There's only one book, and that's Quran. There are only these verses of the Quran. And the verses of the Quran tell you, if you are a jihadi Muslim, jihad doesn't mean always fighting and killing. Those who support the jihadists, those who give them arms, those who supply them with shelter, those who shall supply them with information, those who supply them with money, that's also part and parcel of jihad.
Right. Those who deceive on their behalf so to make the prey easier to victimize are engaged in jihad.
Right.
Yeah, and those women who manufacture and indoctrinate tomorrow's suicide bombers, they're engaged in jihad.
They are the women. They are the mothers.
Right.
The mothers.
They're the manufacturing. That's the Islamic war manufacturing facility.
Perfect.
The Muslim woman's womb.
Yes.
And so when it all comes down to the common denominator, Islam is a criminal enterprise. Why is it, IQ, that you are the only person in the world who is able to synthesize that accurate and simple reality?
I appreciate your compliment.
But it's true. You were it. And then you wrote me a letter where you were trying to be, what you were doing is saying that, you know, you appreciate the fact that, that somebody who understands the religion acknowledges this reality. But why isn't the entire world coming to you and saying, you have given us the single greatest gift, the ability to protect ourselves against the most malignant plague that mankind has ever suffered under, Islam. And that you uniquely have given us the means to protect ourselves against it.
Because there are very few human beings who are as intelligent as you are, as knowledgeable as you are, as gracious as you are. That's why.
But the entire world ought to be acknowledging your contribution.
I know.
I mean, really, you are the single greatest gift to humankind. Someone who not only has taken the time to understand what Islam is, somebody who has come up with a formula for all of us to understand what it is and how to deal with it. And you do it without compensation. You do it with great courage, and you do it with great compassion. You're the single most important person I know in the world regarding the single most important issue today in the world. And yet,
tragically, your voice and my voice are small voices in the tornado.
Yeah, and they should be the loudest.
Absolutely. I agree with you. They should be the loudest because they are the logical ones. They are not malicious. Neither you nor I are malicious.
Ever.
Neither you nor I are racist.
No.
We are telling it the way it is. The facts, the facts, the facts.
And nor are we violent. We're opposed to racism. We're opposed to violence. We're opposed to the consequence of malicious lies, which is why we're opposed to Islam. So, IQ, I appreciate you. I only wish the rest of the world listened to your voice. It's the most important voice at this time.